The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
It's perfect that we have John Hoffmeister back on. We had John on, I guess it was about a week or so ago, and we had technical difficulties, kind of dropped him right in the middle of the show, which was awful.
Don't you
And so he was kind enough to come back with us, and we've got today John Hoffmeister, founder and CEO of Citizens for Affordable Energy, former president of Shell Oil Company, and author of a great book called Why We Hate the Oil Companies, Straight Talk from an Energy Insider. John, welcome back to the show, and thank you so much for coming back on with us.
Thank you. Delighted to be back.
All right. I tell you what, I'm going to start out a little differently this time because, you know, most people, when they retire, my dad worked for Gulf Oil. They kind of retire from the energy industry, go out and play golf and enjoy themselves. You've done just the opposite. You have founded the Citizens for Affordable Energy. What is the Citizens for Affordable Energy?
Mike, it's a not-for-profit, nonpartisan organization that attempts to talk to grassroots citizens about the future of energy, the future of the environment, so that they know more after we've talked to them than they did before. We don't have any ideological purpose. We're not right-wing, left-wing. We're just factual. We just deal with facts. And the facts are, if somebody got gasoline for $2.97 or $2.99, good for them, but it's not going to last because we have such a miserable future outlook for energy that we're all going to pay through the nose because nobody in leadership in this country is doing anything about the future of energy. Not the president, not the Congress, not the Republicans, not the Democrats. It's pathetic, and the people in this country need to know that. So Citizens for Affordable Energy, frankly, we spend 7 days a week working on how can we help Americans understand the plight that they face with the future of energy in this country. It is such a miserable outlook. We have the oldest energy system in the world. Not the kind we have. It's the oldest. It's the biggest. It's the most technologically advanced, but it's also the oldest, and it's falling apart in many parts of the country. And when it comes to transportation fuels, we're being gouged by OPEC. We've been gouged by OPEC for 40 years. What has anybody done about it? Nothing. We have more resources in this country than we'll ever need. Americans need to know that. We're telling them that. But our political process, our political system won't do anything about it.
Yeah, I've kind of wondered that because it's become very apparent the last several years that we do have huge resources here, yet we still spend billions and billions and billions of dollars importing oil and gas. And the argument I hear is that, well, yeah, we're going to spend down theirs, drain theirs, and then suddenly the tables will reverse and we'll be the only ones with energy. But that's not true, is it? Because I was reading this morning, for instance, in preparation for the show, that you know one of the big things for us is fracking. I wanted to ask you about that. That's really opened up a lot of things here in the U.S. But they say, you know, eventually they'll be fracking in Europe, for instance, so the Europeans can then thumb their nose to the Russians who've kind of held sway over there. Yeah, really, what's going on here? I mean, we have so much energy. Why are we not a net exporter of energy?
Well, the notion that we will be the last people with energy is predicated upon utter nonsense.
Right.
it's an argument that doesn't hold. The fact that we have so much energy, we have had such a political divide in this country over whether we do or do not produce our own energy that it is the perversity of partisanship that prevents us from developing our own energy. We have some who think that anything that's called hydrocarbon is bad for us. In other words, coal, oil, natural gas are all hydrocarbon forms of fossil energy. There are those who believe that it is absolutely immoral to produce more fossil fuel energy, that we should be using the wind and the water and the sun to power our energy system. That would be fine if it worked. It doesn't work well enough to power the energy system that we have. And then there are those who are strong advocates of fossil fuels. The fact is they can't agree on what enablers the industry needs to go make more energy a part of our system. And so the fact that they can't agree means nothing can happen, which means we can't produce our own domestic energy because of the lack of enabling government policy. Some people say, well, let's let the market decide what's going to be the future of energy. The problem is We gave up the free market on energy decades ago. Government took over. Government took over at the federal level, the state level, and the local level, all the production of energy. Nothing could be done without a permit. You can't build a gas station without all kinds of permits. And so the government, which is the disabler of energy, is stopping the market from operating. And so if they're going to take over, then they should enable, they should make it possible to produce more energy. And that's where the rub comes in. With respect to fracking, the Europeans have a real hang-up from the environmental standpoint because, frankly, they don't understand it. In this country, we've been fracking for over 40 years. We know how to do it. Okay, there are accidents that occur. They shouldn't occur, but they do. Car accidents shouldn't occur, but they do. Right. And so, but we know how to do fracking. It can be done safely. We've proven that. In fact, we drill about 38,000 wells a year. Half of them are fracked. You only hear a few handfuls of stories of accidents. If car drivers were as good at driving as drilling operators are at drilling, we would be using a whole lot less car insurance because we'd have a lot less car accidents in this country. Drillers are really good at what they do, but they're not perfect.
Right. And why, you know, just coming at you as a consumer, I know that the oil companies have had tremendous power over the years. They've got a lot of cash flow. I'm sure they have huge flanks of lobbyists up there. Why haven't they been able to influence policy more? Because it seems like, and you wrote the book, Why We Hate the Oil Companies. It seems like the people that hate the oil companies the most are all these guys, I don't know what they call them anymore, but the people in Washington, D.C. I mean, like, for instance, this Keystone Pipeline. It seems to be very obvious to me that that's really a smart thing to do, yet it seems like Washington doesn't care.
Well, the reason I wrote the book, Why We Hate the Oil Companies, is to make a point to the oil industry that they have lost the plot with the average consumer. They have depended upon lobbyists. That's the problem. They have depended upon their lobbyists who tend to work one side of the aisle, not both sides of the aisle, in the manner that would be fair and balanced, let's say. But
right.
The real reason that they've lost the plot is they've given up paying attention to what the consumer knows or doesn't know. They don't think of themselves as a consumer-facing industry because the primary leadership of the oil industry is upstream. That is, the people who drill, who explore and drill. And they don't see the end product get to the marketplace through a station with their brand on it. So they don't pay attention to the consumer. And because politicians do pay attention to the consumer, because the consumer is the voter, when the consumers complain about high prices, the politicians point the fingers at the oil companies.
Right.
And the oil companies haven't done their job of educating the end consumer the way consumer electronics companies have. So Apple or Google, who care a lot about the end consumer, can do almost anything because nobody complains about those companies. But the gasoline companies are continuously accused by consumers.
Okay, John, if you'll hang on to that, we'll come back just on this side of the break. Back in just a moment.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We're getting stirred up today about energy because everybody probably in our listening area is an energy state. I think we broadcast
Absolutely. Basically
all the states we broadcast over the energy states, and so it means a lot to our economies. And what they do in Washington means a lot to what we can do, what the energy companies can do. And although there's been a recent resurgence in energy and the energy industry, we're doing better, I think, across the board. The future is uncertain. And so we're talking today with the former president of Shell Oil Company, John Hofmeister, who was known for being a straight shooter and willing to challenge his peers throughout the industry. Now he is the founder of Citizens for Affordable Energy, and he crisscrosses the country in a grassroots campaign to change the way that you and I, as consumers, look at energy. And, John, just before your break, you were talking about really what a poor job that the big energy companies had done in their PR, and that they had actually relied on lobbyists more than reaching out to the public. Do you, you know, as you crisscross the country, I know you're talking to us. I know that you're, the purpose of your book and the purpose of Citizens is to give us a better idea of what the real story is about. Are the oil companies listening? Are they beginning to change how they reach out, or there is just the same old at your former place of employment and Exxon and all those other folks out there?
I think there are some companies that are very concerned about the lack of historic engagement with the public, and I think they are reaching out, and I'm pleased to see that. I encourage that all the time. There are some companies, though, that don't see it as their responsibility. They do not see the education of the public as something that benefits their shareholders, and I'm sorry they don't see it that way, because it really does. The more the public knows, the better off everyone is, because there's better understanding. And in a democracy, the way a democracy works best is if people are informed. When people aren't informed about all the issues and all the circumstances and the consequences, you get very short-sighted, very hot-tempered kinds of headline reactions to things. And what we really need is information. And I think people are mostly smart. And when they have the information they need, they can make good choices.
Why don't they, and I agree with you. And so, first of all, let's kind of get this out of the way. How can people follow Citizens for Affordable Energy? You have a website, correct?
We do have a website. Just Google citizensforaffordableenergy.org, and it'll come up. We also have a membership, which doesn't cost anything. People can become a member of Citizens for Affordable Energy. Their obligations are just to do what they want to do to learn more about energy. And then there's another category called ambassadors. We have ambassadors who help us get the word out. And it has to be non-political. We're very strict on being non-political. We don't want to choose sides and suddenly get labeled as a group that is pro-democratic or pro-Republican. No, we're pro-American. That's what we are. We're pro-American, pro-consumer. We don't take any money from energy companies. We're funded entirely by consumers, so they can help us with a contribution, $10, $25, $100. It goes a long way. I don't get paid. We don't have any paid staff, so our costs are very low. They're all volunteers. And so any money we get is used to educate more Americans, not to pay people's salaries or to pay rent. We're a virtual organization. We operate totally through social networking. And so it is the maximum use of people's contributed dollars to educate as many people as we possibly can about the facts of energy, not the politics of energy. In fact, we expose the politics of energy and how short-sighted and how selfish many elected officials are just trying to promote their own agenda while Americans suffer. Keystone XL Pipeline is a perfect example. President Obama wanted lots of money from environmentalists during the campaign, so he held up the Keystone XL pipeline as though he was going to try to stop it. He got a lot of money from environmentalists. Now he doesn't know how to approve it because they're going to bang him over the head, having contributed to his reelection. And if he approves the Keystone XL pipeline, it will be like he tree turned on them. And so money and the way in which politicians use money to try to get their agenda or get their election behind them, is we're very critical of money in politics. And so we don't use money from oil companies so that nobody can accuse us of huckstering for the oil companies. We're not. They can do very fine for themselves. They could do better if they talk to the public. But we don't need them in order to get the message out to the public.
Now, speaking of environmentalists, can environmentalists and oil companies, energy companies coexist? I mean, they seem to go head-to-head almost like the Republicans and the Democrats, they don't seem to ever be able to reach a compromise. One side's got to win or the other side's got to win. What do you think?
Well, during my tenure as Shell president, I had open relationships with the National Resources Defense Council, Friends of the Earth, and a variety of other environmentalists. You've got to talk to each other. I have always found a willingness to talk to each other. You have to find the areas of agreement and then find the areas of disagreement. You can actually agree on a friendly basis to disagree. And that doesn't mean you're mortal enemies. It just means you disagree on a particular topic. And so, for example, with one group, they didn't agree with Shell's willingness to go into the Arctic Ocean to look for oil. And I said, okay, we don't agree on that, but we agree on a lot of other things. So let's work together where we can agree. And if you choose to work against us in the case of the Arctic, so be it. We'll work against you in the case of the Arctic. We believe that Americans deserve access to their energy assets, which include the Arctic. And so we had that disagreement. And so I think there's recently in Pittsburgh, last March, there was a huge announcement in Pittsburgh about five companies. One of them was my former company, Shell, and five environmental groups that agreed on the golden rules of fracking, publicly announced in a big, big ceremony. And they have agreed on principles by which the companies will frack, and the environmentalists will have oversight to make sure those rules are followed. And I think that's an opportunity to just do the right thing, where voluntary agreements between environmentalists and energy companies work just fine. But you're right. There are situations where they go at loggerheads, where right. They're not talking to each other. They're not communicating. They're at war almost. Keystone XL pipeline is one of those where you have some really scary environmentalists who are willing to deny Americans access to affordable energy for their own purposes of trying to kill carbon and eliminate hydrocarbon energy as a source of energy to Americans. Hey, they have the freedom, same freedom of speech that you and I do. But when they get militant about it and they actually say to people, you should be willing to be arrested in order to stop this pipeline, I think that's carrying it a bit beyond freedom of speech.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, too. There really isn't, looking at the alternative fuel, solar, wind, there really isn't an effective energy source that really matches up to carbon-based energy, is there?
Not yet, there isn't. You know, wind and solar and water power are very powerful forces, but we don't know how to capture them yet. I'm all in favor, if government's going to spend money on energy, then put it into R&D. Don't put it into building inefficient energy sources. Put it into R&D. I do believe that there will come a day, Mike, when solar energy is very efficient and very powerful because we have developed nanotechnology that will capture the sun's energy. And I think that'll work just fine for us, but it's not ready yet.
Well, John, thank you so much for being with us today. I'm going to join your organization, and I'm going to contribute because I think it's a great organization. Thank you so much for founding it, and thank you so much for being on Straight Talk Monday again today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.